So if you've ever stayed up late to read just one more chapter or binged a TV series to see what happens to your favorite characters, you know the supreme power of narrative. As a playwright, I am passionate about the power of story and curious about how it works. And that book I just quoted, Story Genius, unpacks the reason that story has such a hold over us. Stories exist to help us survive, to enable us to play out in our imaginations how we would respond to threats. Whether those threats are existential, like the saber-toothed tiger that attacked your clan's last mammoth hunting expedition, or social, and this is where I'm glad I don't know you very well, like social, like the new divorcee who's been flirting with your husband at coffee hour. We turn to story to help us plan for the future, to help us know what to do to ensure our personal and collective survival. The next time you are gripped by a story, see if you can notice how it's actually helping you learn how to survive. As we face a dismal array of existential threats to our survival as a nation and a species, the threat of the destruction of our democracy, the threat of climate change, we turn to story to show us scenarios of how we might respond, how we might survive. Brain studies reveal that when we're reading or watching a story, our brain activity is not that of an observer, but of a participant. If you don't believe it, if you're braver than me, go to a horror movie at your local theater. Now, when the monster is slashing away at some poor, helpless victim who's trying desperately to get away, turn around and look behind you. Chances are you will see the audience squirming in their seats, pulling in their elbows, scrunching up their knees, balling up to protect their vital organs. It's strange. Clearly, these are smart people who have seen a movie before. Why on earth would they think they have to protect their bodies from what's happening on the screen? The answer is they're not thinking at all. They are experiencing the action as if it was really happening to them. Their brains are instructing their bodies to do all the things they do if they were actually under mortal attack. Just as flight simulators train pilots to deal with a variety of situations, what do you do when this red light comes on or that buzzer starts buzzing? Stories are our universal human flight simulators. As the heroine of the tale faces down the predatory stalker, we watch and identify with her and see what she sees, and our brains actually experience the exact same sensations and emotions that we'd have if that was happening to us in real life. We unconsciously integrate this information into ourselves so that we might find we have access to surprising courage within ourselves when we are faced in the office with an angry boss or, speaking personally, in the shower with a fist-sized hairy spider. In the case of our democracy, we might turn to stories of other times people have faced down fascism to see what they did and how they fared. You need only look at the offerings on Netflix and Amazon Prime, a huge proportion of which are stories, movies about World War II, to see the great appeal of this particular genre of story. But for climate change, which is unprecedented in our experience, we turn to science fiction and fantasy. The topic of the movie or the book or the comic does not have to explicitly be climate change. The topic might be alien invasions or outbreaks of new diseases or, of course, good old zombies, anything that is unprecedented, new, a novel danger. We want to see stories about people like us facing these new dangers. Science fiction and fantasy are our new mythologies. They are showing us alternatives, different ways to respond to the threats of the future. Whether you are a fan or not, these new mythologies permeate our culture and I believe are tremendously important in training us to develop the capacities to deal with the threats and challenges of the future. The stories we tell and absorb are very important because they affect and inform our beliefs and actions. They actually influence the future of humanity and of the world. My friend Bob, who lives on Whidbey Island, worked at home and got a bit lonely. He loved hiking, and he was pleased when he was invited to go on a hike in the woods with the men's group from his Unitarian Church. He was happy at the prospect of getting away from his desk and into the beautiful natural world with men who shared his love of our landscape. He came back from the hike deeply disappointed. The sole topic of conversation among the group before, during, and after the hike was how the environment was being destroyed. The men tried to top each other's stories with tales of gloom and despair. Bob came home depressed and determined to go back to hiking alone or with people who were observing a meditative silence. Those stories of gloom and despair, starting in the 1980s, much science fiction took a turn away from the uplifting and optimistic themes of its classic era, and fantasy fiction turned away from the idealized medieval themes that had dominated that genre. A huge subgenre emerged that now emphasized a dark view of the future and of human nature. These stories came to dominate the whole field of speculative fiction. They are known collectively as grimdark. And there's a little insert in your order of service where I have definitions of these things for you. In grimdark, if there's a glass with water in it, it's half empty. These grimdark stories depict a world that is particularly dystopian, amoral, or violent, and depict human beings as fundamentally selfish, cynical, and disillusioned. A prime example of grimdark is the unbelievably popular Game of Thrones. Any fans here? Oh, come on. Come on. Be brave. All right. I haven't watched it myself, but I am told that in Game of Thrones, everyone is out for her or himself or their own tribe, and no one can be trusted to be consistently good. It provides a deeply cynical view of human nature. The view that the actions of one person can do little to improve this world, that the forces of evil and inertia and temptation will ensure that all of us are doomed. The best we can hope for is a little struggle to oppose danger and maybe rescue a few others for a brief time. In grimdark stories, good characters inevitably make bad decisions, and the truly great people suffer because of their hope. Other massively popular grimdark stories, such as Breaking Bad and The Walking Dead, take place in universes in which cruelty is a given and social systems are destined to betray or disappoint. In reaction to grimdark, a genre emerged that's known as Noble Bright. In Noble Bright, the glass is always half full. Noble Bright stories promote the notion that the actions of one person can make a difference, that even if that person is flawed and opposed by strong forces, he can rise to heroic actions that, even if they may cost him his life, improve the lives of others. Noble Bright is essentially hopeful, both about the potential for human flourishing and the heroic possibilities of human nature. A classic Noble Bright story is the King Arthur legend. These stories focus on good versus evil, where the hero often defeats the villain and all of society's ills are fixed because of it. A new category of stories that has just recently been identified and held up by Alexandra Rowland, a fantasy writer, is to me far the most interesting. It is hope punk. Punk, for those of us who did not spend the 1970s with safety pins in our earlobes, is an artistic and lifestyle genre that emphasizes rebellion, the rights of minorities and the individual, and rejects fascism in all its forms. Hope punk isn't as much a genre as it is a perspective on stories, one that is optimistic and is about people fighting for change despite overwhelming odds. As soon as I learned about it, I fell madly in love with hope punk. Alexandra Rowland said, "Grimdark says that there's no point in trying to be good. If you want to win, you have to sort of descend to the level of the villains and meet them on their terms." Rowland said that hope punk fits between grimdark and noble bright, between hopeless dystopianism and idealistic utopianism. Hope punk acknowledges that the world can be bad, but believes that people should fight to make it better. She says, hope punk reminds us that all is not lost, that we can bring goodness back. As examples of the hope punk attitude in fiction and in history, she cites Gandhi, especially with the incident at the Dharasana salt works, where Gandhi led 2,500 people up to the salt factory, and they knew that they were going to be beaten down, and they just kept calmly walking up. Nonviolent resistance is definitely part of hope punk. So many artists and legendary figures are also hope punk. John Lennon, Robin Hood, Harriet Tubman, all of these amazing historical figures who have looked at a terrible atrocity that was happening around them and said, I'm going to say or do something about it. I'm going to potentially put myself in the line of fire to get it done because this is important. So hope punk is as much a mood and a spirit as a literary movement. It's a narrative message of keep fighting no matter what and keep hoping no matter what. Hope punk says that genuinely and sincerely caring about something, anything, requires bravery and strength. Hope punk is never about submission or acceptance. It's about standing up and fighting for what you believe in. It's about standing up for other people. It's about demanding a better, kinder world and truly believing that we can get there if we care about each other with every drop of power in our hearts. And hope punk does not envision an end where all fighting will be over forever. It depicts the fight to achieve human progress as something permanent. The fight never ends. There is no permanent happy ending. Hope punk says that kindness and softness doesn't equal weakness, Rowland said, and that in this world of brutal cynicism and nihilism, being kind is a political act. Rowland came up with the concept of hope punk in 2017. Besides offering a critique of the unrelenting pessimism of grimdark, she was also responding to a real-world mood after the election of 2016. I was having a lot of feelings about the catastrophizing and despair that I was seeing amongst my social circles at the time, Rowland says. Everything was new and different suddenly. She said, hope punk is a feeling, and the feeling has been around for ages. I didn't invent the feeling. I just put a word on it. All throughout history, you can find examples of people standing up to terrifying regimes and holding the line against them and surviving against all odds just by force of sheer bloody-minded obstinacy. Hope punk is a radical call to arms for us to imagine a better world. Its message is that we must fall in love with the world that we so deeply wish to change, that when we go out for a hike in the woods, we should spend our energy loving what we're seeing. Its message is also that people are neither all good like the heroes of Novalbright, nor all bad like the cynical anti-heroes of Grimdark. We are capable of great atrocities and amazing kindness, Hope Punk says. We have the capacity to choose how to act to create the world that we want to see, even though we know that nothing is guaranteed. Hope Punk is not a glass half empty or a glass half full kind of thing. It's acknowledging that there's some water in the glass at all, looking at it clearly and with an open mind, and figuring out what we can accomplish with this little bit of water. Hope Punk knows that everything is impermanent and that nothing is promised. Novalbright says we can eventually win the fight and have a happy ending, and Hope Punk says that there's no such thing as winning, and we have to keep doing the work every single day for the rest of civilization. I have long been in love with the dazzling optimism of Unitarianism in the 1880s, with their belief in the continuity of human development in all worlds, or the progress of mankind onward and upward forever. That is Novalbright, the bedrock belief in the perfectibility of human beings, the achievability of world peace and unity. Today, I believe that, like those hikers who spent the whole hike bemoaning how awful everything was, the Unitarian Universalist world is in the grip of grimdark. Can I hear an amen? Is anybody with me? A deeply pessimistic mood, brothers and sisters, focused on injustices, disasters, and victimhood, with a very strange resistance, not just to the idea of perfectibility, but even, let me rephrase that, resistance not just to the idea of perfectibility, but even to the possibility of improvement. In the spring issue of the UU World magazine, which I opened at random, an article about the struggle for racial justice starts out, "This is not a game. We are not going to win." That's not the Unitarian Universalism I signed up for, where we're defeated before we even start. That sounds an awful lot like Calvinist predeterminism to me. I want a faith, a world, an existence where victory may not be guaranteed, but where with community, grit, and loyalty, even the most imperfect of us may find in ourselves a nobility of spirit, a determination to fight every day to make the world a better place. And not alone, but with comrades. Community is a huge part of Hope Punk. Alexandra Rowland said, "We accomplish great things when we form bonds with each other. We're stronger, we can build higher, and we can take better care of each other." I had just finished the first draft of my current play. I take forever to write. I am so slow. Started it last August. I just finished the first draft of Risk Benefit when I learned about Hope Punk, and I thought, gee, I wonder if my play is Hope Punk, and I was delighted to see that indeed it is, through and through. I encourage us all to seek out and support and create Hope Punk stories, music, movies, theater, video games, novels, comics, art, attitudes. I would like to conclude with a shining example of Hope Punk from the Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers movie. In their desperate quest to defy Sauron and destroy the One Ring by climbing Mount Doom and throwing the ring into the volcano, the little hobbits, particularly Frodo and Sam, struggle at every step of their trek. The question of whether Frodo will succumb to the evil lure of the One Ring as he carries it to Mordor is perpetually in doubt. Yet the two friends survive by leaning on one another and continually choosing to fight despite highly uncertain outcomes. Ultimately, Sam and Frodo are able to succeed because they remain true to their well-established hobbit values of love, community, and friendship as they fight. As Frodo is about to surrender from exhaustion and heartsickness, Sam gives an amazing speech about the power of stories to inspire courageous resistance and inspires Frodo to continue. And I'd like to read this aloud first, and you can follow along if you like. It's in that handout. And then we'll show the video clip from the movie. It's a little hard to hear in spots, so I'm just trying to convey it in a few different ways. This, I believe, is Hope Punk at its most inspiring. This is what I hope our faith will teach, what will keep us going, what will ultimately save our democracy and our planet. It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo, the ones that really mattered, full of darkness and danger they were, and sometimes you didn't want to know the end, because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing, this shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come, and when the sun shines, it will shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you, that meant something, even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going because they were holding on to something. That there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. Let it be said of us that we knew that there's something good in the world and that it's worth fighting for, and that we did fight for it. So may it be. Amen.